Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we're going to find out what is one of the most powerful oils in the world that we should be using on a regular basis. A little insight from Elizabeth Rentner of Natural Society. We're also going to look at chlorella and spirulina and how they can help treat viral hepatitis C. Green Med Info, Case Adams. We're also going to look at how we can do more to clean up our arteries to prevent heart attacks. And from Sayer G, garlic is slowing cardiovascular disease progression. That's good. And a lot more on health and healing. Then, as we have an absolutely packed show today, I'm going to give you part two of that Millennials Talking to Millennials, an interesting 7-minute conversation. And we'll play a little bit, maybe a couple of minutes from yesterday, to get you into that rhythm of thought that he had and carry forward today. Also, we had this gentleman on the show a couple of times, William Benny. He was with the National Security Agency for 30 years, in fact, clear back to nearly its beginning. And he quit in 2001 because what he saw is all the laws they were breaking, they were spying on American citizens, something they were not supposed to do. So I've put together this very short clip where he was on Tucker Carlson. And Tucker, which surprises me, seemed completely overwhelmed by the idea that they were actually breaking the law and spying on us. Hello, Tucker. Welcome to the world we've been living in for a long time. And hopefully it inspires you to do more programs on it. So you're going to hear from him and how bad is it? Because when you realize that they can monitor every single phone call in the world, then they would have known the truth about Benghazi. We now have a new piece of information with some new revealed text messages from Hillary Clinton that she and Barack Obama both gave stand-down orders not to intervene. That's been an open sore of why didn't any rescue occur in that 13-hour period that could have saved lives. Now we know. But they would have known that, the National Security Agency. They would have known whether or not Trump was engaged with the Russians. They would have known all this. So if they knew it, why didn't we find out? So we're going to learn more on that. Also today, in the second part of our program, I have Professor Stephen Zunis. He is a professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco, where he chairs the Department in Middle Eastern Studies. He is quite simply one of the finest scholars in the world on the Middle East. And I'm inviting him on to talk about something that everyone in the media, including the alternative media, has gotten wrong. Yesterday, 100 Syrian soldiers fighting to protect Syria from terrorists were killed by Americans in Syria. The media, and I watched it, the media portrayed this as if we were protecting our soldiers. No, we weren't. We were protecting the terrorists who work on our behalf that we pay. Well, questions like, isn't Syria still a sovereign nation? Yes. Were we invited there like the Russians? No. Were we defending terrorists? Yes. Why won't we have a discussion on how much of our money goes to fund and train and arm terrorists? Well, that would embarrass us. We're supposed to be fighting a war against terrorists. What if it's shown that we are supporting the largest terrorist organizations through their proxies like Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates? So this is a story that needs to be told. So over the next 3 days, I'm going to invite real journalists, not these people at CNN or NBC, and these are just clowns. They couldn't begin to come into the same room with people who are legitimate. So we're going to have In fact, I was going to have her on today, but I wasn't sure the satellite, from Syria, Vanessa Beely, a journalist. We're going to have Professor Juan Cole, professor of Middle East Studies, University of Michigan. He is now in Qatar, and we're going to have him on Monday. So you'll hear the truth about what's going on in Syria and how, had it not been for Russia, not America, you would now have, long ago, you would have had terrorists running the entire country. There's countries that would have supported that, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and Israel. But we're going to get to the truth. And also today, we're going to, I'm going to give you some information on a hepatitis B vaccine study from India that shows that it's not necessary. And this was published in the Indian Journal of Pediatrics, their peer-reviewed journal. So we have a lot to share. But we always begin with the latest on health and healing. This has been a very common oil that's been used for cooking, but more often than not for health. It is called black cumin, C-U-M-I-N, or its scientific name is Nigellia, N-I-G-E-L-L-A, sativa, S-A-T-I-V-A. So what's the big deal about it? Well, if you are from the Islamic faith, you would know that the Prophet Muhammad is said to have claimed the seeds, the black cumin seeds, from this plant can cure almost anything. In fact, the seeds were even found in the tomb of King Tutankhamun. They're also mentioned in the Bible. So the history of black cumin as a healer is common. And we're only now beginning to become aware of it in the United States. Black cumin is frequently called a spice. It's also found pressed into an oil for supplemental usage. And there's over 100 different known phytochemicals in it. And it's like conjugated linoleic acid and tannins and antioxidants. It contains proteins and folic acid and calcium and zinc and iron and copper and stearic acid. It has all these other chemicals, at least those that we know. So why should you be interested in black cumin oil? For a simple reason. Because it is known to help treat headaches, toothaches. It creates stronger and healthier hair. It helps prevent hair loss, and it gives you stronger, more smooth, which is what you want, fingernails and toenails. It lowers the cholesterol level. It improves respiratory function. It reduces the symptoms of cold. It increases breast milk production in nursing mothers. It is phenomenal for digestion. It helps regulate blood pressure. It increases energy. And it also helps if you have gas, diarrhea, or even hemorrhoids. So it is quite simply, of all the oils that I'm aware of at this moment, it would be, well, quite simply, it's in a class by itself. Nothing comes close to it. But there are two other things that are very important that we should be having. And one is chlorella, C-H-L-O-R-E-L-L-A, and the other is spirulina, S-P-I-R-U-L-I-N-A. In this particular study, as reported by Case Adams, researchers from Springfield, Massachusetts Northgate Hospital have determined that chlorella is a viable treatment for hepatitis C. That's adding to the already substantial clinical research indicating another blue-green algae, spirulina, acts as a therapeutic agent also in treating hepatitis C as well. Now, I've seen tens of thousands of people, and I noticed about 20 years ago, all within 1 week, I was counseling some women in their late 40s to early 50s. There were five of them, and they were coming in for other conditions, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and their symptoms did not indicate that it was just cancer alone they were suffering from. I said, have you had blood tests done? Nope. Get a complete viral panel. I was expecting Epstein-Barr virus, cytomegalovirus, coxsackievirus, adenovirus, All of them tested positive for hepatitis C. That really shocked them. But then when I went back in great detail into their lifestyles back when they were in their teens and 20s, there were qualities of their life that could have put them at risk of developing hepatitis C, and that's probably what happened. But it can be dormant for decades. You could have it and not know it. That's why I suggest people get a viral load done. And one of the first things I did, and it was actually a part of their cancer protocol, was to flood the body with chlorophyll, because chlorophyll is terrific for persons with cancer. Doesn't matter what kind of cancer. And then the chlorophyll was more concentrated because I wanted them to get at least about 10 grams a day of pure chlorophyll. That's a lot of vegetables they'd have to eat, so I suggest they just get some chlorella powder and spirulina powder, mix the two together. Within a year, they all were gone with their hepatitis C. There was no medicines used. They all got high dose of intravenous vitamin C, which I believe is also important, with like aqueous vitamin A, which is a water-soluble vitamin that doesn't store in the body. But it was the chlorophyll that made the difference. Their energy picked up, their achiness, many of the symptoms that you would expect a person with Lyme's disease have were gone. And I attribute that to the chlorella and spirulina. So in this case, the researchers treated a group of adults who had chronic, meaning long-term, hepatitis C with chlorella for 12 weeks, together with a group of 26 patients who acted as control receiving conventional treatment. The patients were tested for liver enzymes and other symptoms of the often fatal liver disease before and after the 12-week treatment period. The researchers are given 1,000 milligrams, that's 1 gram, of chlorella for each week, and then 1,500 milligrams for the remainder of the period. This was added to 30 millimeters of chlorella liquid given through the trial period. I would have given 10 times that amount. So the fact that they were able to clear hepatitis C out of the body with such a small amount is, to me, phenomenal. And the liver enzymes of aspartate, or what is known as AST, which is a aminotransferase, and alanine aminotransferase, were measured at the end of the 3-month trial period, and the liver produces higher levels of these enzymes when it's suffering from infection or chemical toxicity. And in the case of hepatitis, the liver is dealing with a virus that infects millions of people around the world. And the researchers also tested for genetic changes, specifically viral RNA levels. This indicates the strength of the infection, the viral load. But after the 12 weeks of chlorella treatment, the researchers found a 70% of the hepatitis C patients' levels of these enzymes significantly decreased, and most of the patients had decreased the ALT levels. In addition, 77% of the patients reported increased energy levels and feeling better. The researchers also found that the patients' immune systems were improved. This is the conclusion of their article. We propose that the improvements in liver function tests in our population of chronic hepatitis C infection is most likely due to the beneficial immunostimulatory effects of chlorella supplementation. So there. And also genetic changes in the hepatitis virus also showed improvement among the chlorella patients. Meanwhile, the patients who were treated with interferon and other conventional therapies did not have those improvements in immunity or liver enzyme reduction as did the chlorella. Now, these results confirm a study done in 2012 when researchers treated 66 patients infected with hepatitis C for 6 months with spirulina, which is a blue-green algae related to chlorella. And they found also using milk thistle was a very good treatment as well. And again, came up with very similar results. So my suggestion, if you have hepatitis C, make sure that you're getting yourself chlorella and spirulina. And you can go into any health food store, and it comes in many different brands, and it's not expensive. And have, I would say, if it's liquid, have yourself about 4 ounces to 6 ounces a day. And also, garlic can help slow cardiovascular disease progression. This can save lives. This was published in the International Journal of Cardiology, and it's an article by Sayer G. Now, just put it in perspective. Cardiovascular disease is the number one cause of medical death within the industrialized societies. Anything that can slow the underlying pathological process in its decades-long and mostly subclinical march towards heart attack or embolism or stroke is worth considering as a prophylactic, especially if it's safe and accessible and affordable. And indeed, a new study published in the journal indicates that aged garlic extract, the liquid extract, in combination with B12, folic acid, B6, and arginine, is capable of favorably altering the ratio of brown to white adipose fat tissue surrounding the heart muscle and reducing homocysteine, which is a blood vessel damaging amino acid, and slowing the progression of coronary artery calcification in human subjects. So, you want to inhibit the nanoplaque formation. You want to retard the progression of subclinical atherosclerosis. You want to inhibit the coronary artery calcification. And all this, it does. Oh, by the way, the omega-3 fatty acids boost immune response, not just turning down inflammation. This was in the Journal of Leukocyte Biology. The long-chain amino acids, the omega-3 fatty acids, can help to boost your immune system by enhancing the function of immune cells. This is new research out of Michigan State University. So that's good. Stronger immune system. What do? Well, you take the omega-3 fatty acids every day, 1,500 to 2,000 milligrams. That's the latest on health and healing, and I am going to give you that information right now from our public health segment involving a study in India. And here's what it says from Vaccine Reaction. A study funded by the Indian Council of Medical Research and published in the Indian Journal of Pediatrics has recently conducted research by pediatricians to examine if the birth dose of hepatitis B vaccine is crucial for acquiring full immunity against hepatitis infection. And they found that it was unnecessary. India first introduced hepatitis B vaccine in 2006, and they've gone on and done this research. So there is no reason, I believe, in the United States for any woman who's pregnant and all their blood is checked anyhow to be given the hepatitis B vaccine. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us.
Whoa. Oh, mercy, mercy me. Oh, things ain't what they used to be. No. Where did all the blue skies go? Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south and east. Whoa, mercy, mercy me.
Yesterday I mentioned in a commentary I did the significance of gratitude, taking nothing or no one for granted. Sometimes there are people who are in our life who may not have the capacity to give us what we believe we deserve in the normal exchange of friendships. However, always put yourself in the position of being the other person. Kind words, unintended gestures where someone goes out of their way to do something for you they didn't have to. Always give those high value, especially when anyone does something kind that they didn't have to. And sometimes we have to be reminded to be kind, to be thoughtful. And it's always nice to get feedback. This came from Cecilia. Gary, she says, actually made me tear up a little during your wonderful discussion of gratitude. I used to journal about gratitude some time ago, and I often thank the running water I have, the roof over my head, the heat in the winter, and the sun that shines with the rain. And I still do. I do believe it is something we have to teach and remind ourselves of every day, or we get lost in the minutia of our little lives. I'm not wealthy, but I have a blessed life, so like you said, it becomes easier to be generous. I have a boy in Sierra Leone I support, a disabled vet I send funds to, and he is an animal rescuer who lives outside of Dallas in a trader camp, and a disabled, recently homeless friend I assist when I can. I suggest others to help one other person or family, then we can all save the world. We have so much, and we give so little. Thank you for all your inspiration and guidance. It is much appreciated every day. And I'll start journaling again and see where it leads me, Celia. So today what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you to go to prn.fm. There are two different little clips I'd like for you to watch. One is just some people bonding with animals. And some are animals they rescued. Some they have helped. But it's wonderful to look at the reaction of the animals to the person. For example, there's this man. Remember those chimps that this terrible lab, this blood New York Blood Bank lab, made all that money and used those poor chimpanzees in experiments, kept them caged up, and then put them in Africa in this near Liberia on a little island with no food or water. And they'd all have died, but some conscientious locals came and fed them. I want you to see how those chimpanzees responded to the people who brought them food and water. You got to watch this. Or a man who saves a kangaroo. Watch the reaction of the kangaroo. But then there's a second one. This is a little difficult to watch because it's of a very old chimpanzee, a female chimpanzee who's probably in her last day of life. And she's struggling. She's laying there having a hard time breathing and just looking around her environment. But then there's a person from long ago that comes in the room. Watch that reaction. Wow. You got to see this. Why? Because all of us are going to have that day in our life where we hope that we have people at the end of our life as we've had through it. But we're a nation today that's estranged from our real emotions, from young to old. We have tens of millions of people who are lonely, who feel that at some point in their life they no longer are relevant to the process they once gave all their time, energy, and loyalty to. It's a painful death when you are no longer relevant. It is much more difficult than dying of any other disease because you can be irrelevant for decades. So imagine if we had people in our life that never considered us irrelevant and kept that bond going. And that's important. Watch both today. Now we're going to hear part two of millennials talking about the problem and solution for millennials of what they face today. Please listen.
Right? What's happening is because we're allowing unfettered access to these dopamine-producing devices and media, basically it's becoming hardwired. And what we're seeing is as they grow older, too many kids don't know how to form deep, meaningful relationships. Their words, not mine. They will admit that many of their friendships are superficial. They will admit that their friends, that they don't count on their friends, they don't rely on their friends, they have fun with their friends, but they also know that their friends will cancel on them if something better comes along. Deep, meaningful relationships are not there because they never practice the skill set, and worse, they don't have the coping mechanisms to deal with stress. So when significant stress starts to show up in their lives, they're not turning to a person, they're turning to a device, they're turning to social media, they're turning to these things which offer temporary relief. We know, the science is clear, we know that people who spend more time on Facebook suffer higher rates of depression than people who spend less time on Facebook. Right? These things balanced. Alcohol is not bad. Too much alcohol is bad. Gambling is fun. Too much gambling is dangerous. Right? There's nothing wrong with social media and cell phones. It's the imbalance. Right? If you're sitting at dinner with your friends and you're texting somebody who's not there, that's a problem. That's an addiction. If you're sitting in a meeting with people you're supposed to be listening to and speaking, and you put your phone on the table, face up or face down, I don't care, that sends a subconscious message to the room that you're just not that important to me right now, right? That's what happens. And the fact that you cannot put it away is because you are addicted, right? If you wake up and you check your phone before you say good morning to your girlfriend, boyfriend, or spouse, you have an addiction. And like all addiction, in time, it'll destroy relationships, it'll cost time, and it'll cost money, and it'll make your life worse, right? So you have a generation growing up with lower self-esteem that doesn't have the coping mechanisms to deal with stress, right? Now you add in the sense of impatience, right? They've grown up in a world of instant gratification. You want to buy something, you go on Amazon, it arrives the next day. You want to watch a movie? Log on and watch a movie. You don't check movie times. You want to watch a TV show? Binge. You don't even have to wait week to week to week, right? I know people who skip seasons just so they can binge at the end of the season, right? Instant gratification. You want to go on a date? You don't even have to learn how to be like, hey. You don't even have to learn and practice that skill. You don't have to be the uncomfortable one who says yes when you mean no and says no when you mean no and yes when you... You don't have to... Swipe right. Bang, I'm a stud. Right? You don't have to learn the social coping mechanisms. Right? Everything you want, you can have instantaneously. Everything you want, instant gratification. Except job satisfaction and strength of relationships, there ain't no app for that. They are slow, meandering, uncomfortable, messy processes. And so I keep meeting these wonderful, fantastic, idealistic, hardworking, smart kids. They've just graduated school. They're in their entry-level job. And I sit down with them and I go, how's it going? They go, I think I'm going to quit. I'm like, why? They're like, I'm not making an impact. I'm like, you've been here 8 months. You know? It's as if they're standing at the foot of a mountain and they have this abstract concept called impact that they want to have in the world, which is the summit. What they don't see is the mountain. I don't care if you go up the mountain quickly or slowly, but there's still a mountain. And so what this young generation needs to learn is patience. That some things that really, really matter, like love or job fulfillment, joy, love of life, self-confidence, a skill set, any of these things, all of these things take time. Sometimes you can expedite pieces of it, but the overall journey is arduous and long and difficult. And if you don't ask for help and learn that skill set, you will fall off the mountain. Or you will, the worst case scenario, and we're already seeing it, the worst case scenario is we're seeing an increase in suicide rates. We're seeing an increase in this generation. We're seeing an increase in accidental deaths due to drug overdoses. We're seeing more and more kids drop out of school or take leaves of absence due to depression. Unheard of. This is really bad. The best case scenario, those are all bad cases, right? The best case scenario is you'll have an entire population growing up and going through life and just never really finding joy. They'll never really find deep, deep fulfillment in work or in life. They'll just waft through life and it'll be just, it's fine. How's your job? It's fine. It's the same as yesterday. How's your relationship? It's fine. Like that's the best case scenario. Which leads me to the fourth point, which is environment. Which is we're taking this amazing group of young, fantastic kids who are just dealt a bad hand. It's no fault of their own. And we put them in corporate environments that care more about the numbers than they do about the kids. They care more about the short-term gains than the long-term life of this young human being. We care more about the year than the lifetime, right? And so we are putting them in corporate environments that aren't helping them build their confidence, that aren't helping them learn the skills of cooperation, that aren't helping them overcome the challenges of a digital world and finding more balance, that isn't helping them overcome the need to have instant gratification and teach them the joys and impact and the fulfillment you get from working hard over on something for a long time that cannot be done in a month or even in a year. And so we're thrusting to them in corporate environments, and the worst part about it is they think it's them. They blame themselves. They think it's them who can't deal. And so it makes it all worse. It's not. I'm here to tell them it's not them. It's the corporations. It's the corporate environments. It's the total lack of good leadership in our world today that is making them feel the way they do. They were dealt a bad hand, and I hate to say it, but it's the company's responsibility. Sucks to be you. Like, we have no choice, right? This is what we got, and I wish that society and their parents did a better job. They didn't. So we're getting them in our companies, and we now have to pick up the slack. We have to work extra hard to figure out the ways that we build their confidence. We have to work extra hard to find ways to teach them the social skills that they're missing out on.
Okay. He made a lot of important points. The reality, companies are not interested in building anyone's social skills. They're interested in getting people in who've got their act together and working from day one, being on time, being diligent, and being proficient what they do. Unfortunately, when you try to compare the upbringing of an American, not all by any means, but many American young people with those from Japan and South Korea and other countries where they have a greater family dynamic, there are rules that are set, you're not considered entitled, you're not told that you're special about everything, you actually have to be participating in showing that you deserve the places that you have achieved in life. Nothing's taken for granted, and those people just overwhelmingly are the ones that are first being hired. So I think that we have to have a different model. Don't look for corporate America to suddenly become benevolent and want to help everyone. That would be a mistake. Now, in about 10 minutes, we're going to go to our guest. I'm just going to take a moment because a lot of you didn't hear the show I mentioned last week where I said that after a year of not having a particular product, AMPM vitamins and Supreme Health Formula, because I wanted to reformulate them. I want to make them better. And so I spent all this time, but then making them better, I had to find a company that would actually manufacture them. And so I finally found that company to do them in the way that I wanted, in vegan, vegetarian capsules, and in the formula that I felt would be ideal. So I found that company, and finally last week we got them in. What I didn't anticipate is we would sell every one of them. And so we've been out for 4 days, but a new order just came in today. Not a lot, 500 bottles, but at least for those of you who want what I consider the finest vitamin and mineral compound ever. And here's what makes it special. If you took every single ingredient, and we did, and asked what would a month's supply of this cost, and then add it all up, it's about $485. The old price was like around $140. You're getting it for $65. So in effect, you're getting about $480 more or less value for $65. You're getting it less than half of what it was before until we run out. So here's the deal. I put vitamin A, 10,000 milligrams from palmitate and beta-carotene, and vitamin C, 500 milligrams buffered, and vitamin D, 1,000 units, and vitamin E, 200, and then B1, B2, B6, at 25 milligrams, and B12 at 500 micrograms, calcium, magnesium, 500 milligrams each, chromium, molybdenum, selenium, pantothenic acid, pantothate, folic acid at 800 micrograms, by the way, and biotin, and the things that we need every day, like pyrimethamoxazoic acid, vitamin K, iron, zinc, boron, iodine, copper, and potassium. And then the superstars, coenzyme Q10, quercetin, pycnogenol, ginkgo biloba, green tea extract, glutathione, phosphatidylserine, lutein, citrus bioflavonoids, N-acetylcysteine, choline, inositol, bromelain, melatonin, and acetyl-L-carnitine. And that's it. I mean, that's all the active ingredients. So this is, quite simply, in my opinion, the finest, most all-inclusive, synergistic, model of vitamin and mineral ever created. It is better than any I've done, and that's why anytime I can do something new and better, I do. I just didn't realize it would take a year from the time I said, don't produce any more of the other stuff. I've got a new formula, but finally we have it. So if you call the number, you can get it. I do have 500 in. And hopefully those will last me another week until I can get a larger batch. The number you call, and you're only paying, I think it's $65, they'll tell you. Huge savings. I mean, huge. Especially when, and you can do it for yourself. go and look up the price of each one of these ingredients if you bought a month's supply. And you're saving, I believe, about around $420. Huge savings. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Sorry that we didn't anticipate that we would sell out in 2 days, but we did. But then I got the manufacturer to rush back another 500 bottles, so at least those arrived today. So that's good. And again, everybody should be having a full-spectrum multiple vitamin and mineral. This has nothing to do with this green stuff, red stuff. That's completely separate. This has to do with all the biochemical functions that occur each day because you are completely in balance as far as your nutritional intake with these. Now, separately, I believe we're full for the first of our 2 weeks, the second, third week of April. I'm having a retreat. As far as I know, these will be my final retreats because I'm going to be going in a different direction with an intentional community and creating an artisan's village and doing a whole lot of interesting things, a holistic assisted living center. And that is where my energy is, and this will probably be the last retreat. Now, I'm doing it as a fundraiser for WBAI. So if you would like to spend a week in April with the most beautiful environment, and especially millennials who are having a hard time understanding their life, where they fit in, dealing with depression or anxiety, dealing with possibly some of the skills that you did not fully develop because your parents didn't, well, quite simply, as he said, they weren't good parents as far as their parenting skills. You'll learn a lot. We've had a lot of young people come and it changed their life. In fact, one in particular came who had been in psychiatric care for about 20 years, and he was there for 2 weeks, changed his perception, changed his reality, changed his life. He's happy, he's thriving, he's doing great. And that was a year ago he was there. So if you want to have great food, detoxify, rejuvenate, give yourself quality time for journaling and putting everything in perspective, then give a call to Luann Panessi. Say, yeah, it's my time now. I'm going to give myself some quality time in a beautiful environment with positive people and all the time and energy and space I need without distraction to help myself heal. Here's the number you call, 903-881-7008, 903-881-7008, and I'm just going to play you two people at our last retreat, and then we're going to take a break and come back with our guests. Listen to these two people who attended the last retreat.
Hello, my name is Jim. I enjoyed my week here at Garrett's Retreat. I wish I could stay another week. I learned a lot about nature and its balance and keeping things in harmony. I have a lot of tools I will take home with me as far as gardening, cooking, and exercise. And I wish I could stay another week again. Thank you.
My name is Linda Harris. It's an experience for me to be in this retreat. I take home with me when I leave here. I felt energy, peacefulness, and calmness within myself. I also experienced a talent I didn't know I had in the art class. Ellen is very good in what she does. I must thank my husband, Winston Harris, for making this possible for me. Listening to Garinal for many years, I must thank him. I thank the chefs for delicious meals that they have prepared for us. And I'm also thankful the wonderful people that we met here, and I thank Gary ever so much.
Oh, hi, my name is Michael. I just finished a one-week retreat at Gary's beautiful facility here. I'm a chef, and I was diagnosed with high blood pressure, several years ago. On medication, my pressure, the best I got was 140 over 80. After being here for 2 days, you know, experiencing the yoga, the exercise class, the delicious food that, you know, has been prepared by the chef. You know, on Wednesday, I checked my pressure and it was 128 over 80 without medication. So I'm really glad that I was able to come here and experience this life-transforming experience. And I recommend this to anyone who wants to get healthy and to live a good life.
All right, those are just a few people. And you can call Luann at 903-881-7008. Back in a moment with my guests. Please stay with us. We're going now to the San Francisco area to speak with Dr. Stephen Zunes, Z-U-N-E-S. As I mentioned earlier, he is Professor of Politics and International Studies at the University of San Francisco, where he chairs the program in Middle East Studies. He is simply one of the country's leading scholars of Middle Eastern policy and of strategic nonviolent action. He received his Ph.D. from Cornell University and previously served on the faculty of Ithaca College and University of Puget Sound and Whitman College. And he is also the author of many papers and publications, including Western Sahara, War, Nationalism, and Conflict Irresolution, and earlier, Tinderbox, U.S. Foreign Policy and the Roots of Terrorism, co-written with Richard Falk. His website is stephenzunes.org. He's written over 400 articles also. Nice to have you with us today, Stephen.
Great to be with you again.
Stephen, I'm reading all of the reports, listening to the news media, including recently this morning on NPR, and they're all framing it this way. 100 Syrian soldiers were killed yesterday by U.S. forces as a defensive measure and to protect the citizens of Syria. And I'm thinking, why aren't any of the people telling the truth? If you would please, the recent attack on Syrian forces, the invasion of a sovereign nation, where is the UN and international outrage? And also, how much is Russia responsible for getting rid of ISIS instead of the United States? Because we're told the United States is in Syria to get rid of ISIS. And they're not calling any of the people that we have funded or trained anything other than freedom fighters. Give us your insight on this, please.
Well, ISIS fell in large part because the Syrians who are under ISIS's rule either escaped from their rule or refused to cooperate. These ideologues weren't very good administrators, and that combined with airstrikes from U.S. Led forces, from Syrian forces, from Russian forces, certainly weakened them. The ground forces that did the most fighting were the so-called Syrian Democratic Front, which is largely composed of the leftist Kurdish movement, the YPG. What makes the situation highly questionable, in my view, is first of all, ISIS has essentially been defeated in Syria. Why are we still there? If we're really concerned about protecting the Kurdish forces from assault, which is our excuse for attacking the pro-Syrian government militias in recent days, why aren't we fighting Turkey, which is doing much more damage in their assault on Kurdish forces? Turkey is a U.S. Ally. Turkey is crossing the border into Syria, violating Syria's sovereignty. Why aren't we complaining more about or doing something about what Turkey's doing? And then, of course, the question is, though there are many legitimate concerns about the what the Syrian government has been doing to its people in terms of the atrocities, the bombing of cities, and the like, the fact is that Yeah, nobody gave the United States the authority to violate Syrian sovereignty and have troops there, and especially attack forces allied with the Syrian government there at the behest of the Syrian government inside their own country.
When you look at this, what do you think would be the outcome if we were in any other country in an area of the world without being invited, simply taking about one-third of their entire land mass north of the Euphrates as if it's no longer Syrian? It's under the control of the United States.
Oh, actually, it's under control of the YPG-dominated Syrian Democratic Forces. And these are, in the Kurdish populated areas, these really are popular forces. They really do have a lot of support. Ironically, they're a leftist group. They and their allies in Turkey have fought U.S. armed Turkish forces for years. They don't particularly like the United States, given their that was U.S. Weapons that slaughtered so many thousands of Kurds over the years across the border in Syria. In Turkey. But they've made alliance with the United States in order to liberate their area from ISIS. More controversial, however, is that they have moved on to Arab-populated areas as well, and that the amount of territory they control, they've done the fighting on the ground, has largely been made possible by the by U.S. bombing. So what I'm saying is that it would be oversimplistic to say that this is U.S. controlled territory and that these the YPG forces are the ones who are actually running things. They do have popular support in the Kurdish areas, but the extent of their control and this current confrontation with Syria is very much a result of the U.S. intervention. Indeed, this particular area, unlike the areas that are being attacked by Turkey right now, is not heavily populated. What the United States is trying to protect here are oil fields that were liberated from ISIS, but they don't want the Syrian government to have control of their own oil fields. So, one could possibly make a humanitarian argument, if the Syrians were going in and they're, killing all these civilians and the people, the Kurdish people of this area were resisting and wanted, U.S. support. Well, one could possibly make a moral argument in support of that, but this is not about that. This is about protecting oil fields.
Could you explain for this audience the issue of Kurd independence? Because the Kurdish people have been fighting in Turkey and in Syria and surrounding countries that border where they had historically had their homeland for quite some time. And why can't the world get together with the Kurdish people and the people who they believe, the Kurdish people believe, have kept them from having the full benefit of the natural resources and their freedom to live in peace in these countries? Tell us about the Kurdish issue.
Well, the Kurds are the largest captive nation in the world. That is, they're the largest nation that doesn't have its own state, and they occupy much of the northern strip of Syria, southeastern Turkey, northern Iraq, and far northwestern Iran. The largest populations are in Iraq and Turkey. And U.S. policy has been to basically to support Kurds that were fighting governments we didn't like and support suppression of Kurds if they were fighting governments we did like. In the 1990s, there was this bloody counterinsurgency campaign against the Kurds that, in which thousands of villages were destroyed, tens of thousands of people killed, hundreds of thousands of people made refugees. And I remember when President Clinton justifying the bombing of Yugoslavia by what the Serbs were doing to Kosovo, saying, we can't allow this thing to happen on NATO's doorstep. Well, it was happening within NATO already, even worse than what Milosevic was doing to the Kosovar Albanians. And it was done using 90% U.S. weapons. Similarly, we would periodically back the Kurds and abandon the Kurds over the years when they were struggling against Saddam Hussein. When we didn't like Saddam Hussein, we supported them. When he was our ally, when he was fighting Iran, we opposed them. We've gone back and forth on that, using one Kurdish faction against another. And now in Syria, you know, we have we are willing to defend Kurdish positions if being attacked by Syria. But we are looking the other way when these same Kurdish militia are being attacked by our ally Turkey. In other words, the Kurds have been used as pawns by the United States and by other powers over the decades, and their suffering continues as a result.
If you can give us this insight, why can't other scholars appearing on the mainstream media tell a similar story? They're telling everything seems like a neoliberal agenda, as if they were handed out talking points, and they stick within them. I was just listening to NPR, and it was an embarrassment.
Yeah, it is quite frustrating, actually, and something that I have struggled with for years. You know, I naively thought that you know, those of us who got it right when we warned that the invasion of Iraq was based on false pretenses and it would be a disaster, that those of us who told the truth would finally get to be the regulars on these kind of talk shows, and the people who spread the lies would be banished for their insincerity and the fact they got everything wrong. But it's just the same talking heads that we have seen before. And this is a very, very frustrating. I mean, the situation in Syria is very complicated, very tragic. I'm torn about a lot of things there myself, but at least I recognize that it's complicated. And the simplistic arguments that you hear on the mainstream media is just what we don't need. The more difficult a conversation is, difficult situation is, the more we need nuance, we need understanding, and this kind of good and evil kind of thing where the United States is always right, that doesn't help the situation at all.
I appreciate all the good work that you do, and thank you for coming on to giving us your insight on this issue.
Well, my pleasure.
Dr. Stephen Zunis, professor up at the University of California, San Francisco. I'm Gary Null. We're going to now give you a clip on one of the most important people in the history of the National Security Agency. He invented created much of the hardware that they're using. It was only when he saw that they weren't using it against potential terrorists outside the United States, but were collectively spying on every American, that he finally quit in 2001. Please listen in. This is Tucker Carlson and William Binney.
NSA for more than 30 years. He was a famous and highly regarded employee there, but he resigned in 2001, saying the agency was building illegal mass surveillance networks. He says that President Trump almost certainly has been spied on by the government, was being spied on, and probably for a long time. Bill Binney joins us now. Bill, thanks a lot for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Tucker.
Just said in my intro, you spent 30 years there. You're not someone who's speculating, and you believe it's entirely possible that the president was, in fact, spied on?
Yes, in fact, they're taking in fundamentally the entire fiber network inside the United States and collecting all that data and storing it. In a program for Stellar Wind is the name for their program. That's the domestic collection of data on U.S. citizens, U.S. citizens to other U.S. citizens, everything we're doing. Phone calls, emails, and financial transactions, credit cards, things like that, yeah, all of it.
So if you found someone objectionable or dangerous, the temptation would be profound to locate information on that person and perhaps misuse it, would it not be?
Yes. And for example, inside NSA, they had a program called LoveInt. That's where the analysts in NSA looked into that data to find out if their lovers were cheating on them. That's the extent of the data collection that NSA is doing.
But I grew up believing that NSA was not allowed to collect data on Americans. It was supposed to be outwardly focused on our foreign enemies. And you're saying that that's been perverted for many years.
Yes, since 2001.
So what do you make of considering what you just said is that the NSA has all the information? So presumably they could prove or disprove the claims about Russian tampering in this election. They could prove or disprove Trump's tweet about being spied upon. Why wouldn't they?
That would get into the extent of which they've penetrated the network inside the United States. There's another program going on here that not too many people are talking about. They're not even addressing. I think you were trying to get at it with your previous guest. Inside NSA, there's a set of people who are, and we got this from another NSA whistleblower who witnessed some of this. They're inside there, they're targeting and looking at all the members of the Supreme Court, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Congress, both House and Senate, as well as the White House. And all of this data is there at, inside NSA in a small group where they're looking at it. And the idea is to see what people have power over you are going to, what they think you should be doing, or what they're planning to do to you, your budget, or whatever, so you can try to counteract it before it actually happens.
I mean, that's just East German. And by the way, that's got to be illegal. Yeah. I do not believe that that is legal. The oversight committees.
No, it isn't. No,
right, are
violation.
Supposed to be preventing that stuff. And I remember having a conversation with the former Republican chairman of the Oversight Committee, Mike Rogers, and saying this is a big deal and getting an answer in effect, well, you know, terrorism. That doesn't sound like this has anything to do with terrorism.
No, this bulk acquisition, by the way, is inhibiting their ability to detect terrorist threats in advance so they can't stop them. So people get killed as a result, which means, you know, they pick up the pieces and clean up the blood after the attack. That's what's been going on. I mean, they've consistently failed. When Alexander said they'd stop 54 attacks, and he was challenged to produce the evidence to prove that, he failed on every count.
So, but the NSA is not, this is my last question, but and it's an obvious one, the NSA is not its own country. So if the President of the United States, for whom they work, to whom they report, says, look, I want everything you have on X, aren't they required to give it to him?
Yes, but again, he'll never know if they do, because they don't necessarily have to do that internally. You see, you had Nunes and others saying that they never really got to see the raw data. So it's a question of whether or not they pull out the raw data and give him that data or anything, any reports generated off that. They don't have to. And they've been lying to them for consistently for a very long time.
This is a shocking interview. I appreciate it, Bill. It's hard to believe we're putting up with this. Thank you for shedding some light.
Well, it's like the Praetorian Guard. You know, they're going to determine what the emperor does and who the emperor is.
That was the analogy that came to mind. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, so in conclusion, let's put this into perspective. You have a group within, at the top level, we have to assume that it's the president's national security advisors, the head of the National Security Agency, who determine how to use the information that they collect. But when you're collecting every single phone call, every single email in the world, and you have no oversight, and remember, in the entire history of the House of Representatives and the Senate's intelligence oversight committees, never once has someone come forward, not once, and there are many members of these committees, in all these decades and said, we have found a systematic pattern of corruption within these agencies. And yet it's the whistleblowers who show there's been a systematic pattern of corruption. So the corruption is endemic. And the more power you give an agency of government, the more power it will use. But it's using it against the people. And it's not supposed to do that. So then the question is, why do we allow it? And then ask yourself, when was the last time you focused upon walking down the street and seeing how you're being monitored? Not just your doing facial recognition, iris scanning, but also they have these highly sensitive audio monitors that are able to pick up all the conversations you have. Are you aware that when you're in your car and you have that GPS and you have that phone system, they can control your car. They can listen to any conversation in your car. They'll know where you're at any given time. Now they have new medicines that are actually nanomedicines, and they don't tell people what each of those nanoparticles are supposed to do. They only give you some idea that it's for your good benefit to make sure you're taking your medicines on time. but we know that they always have a back-end agenda, but we don't question it. So now we know, for example, that the President of the United States, as of this week, as of yesterday we found out, that one of the top lawyers, a woman lawyer at the FBI, in one of her memos to her partner at the FBI, who was overseeing the Hillary Clinton investigation, stated that the President of the United States, quote, POTUS wants to be kept informed of everything. POTUS means President of the United States. That means the president has been in the loop on this, and yet the media will not touch this, will not criticize him. They're all protecting Hillary Clinton, and we understand why. But every one of these secrets would be known by the National Security Agency. And we knew that for 48 years, J. Edgar Hoover ran the FBI as if it was his own fourth branch of government. He was unchallenged because people were terrified of him. John F. Kennedy wanted to fire him. His brother, who was the attorney general and the boss of the FBI, said, you can't. He knows too much. And JFK at that point had so much that he had going against him, especially in his personal life. It would have kept him from ever having an office again. So that's who's out there, and we're not paying attention, and they're getting away with whatever they want to. So we should start to pay attention. Have a nice day, everyone, and thank you very much for listening.
We got it together, didn't we? We've definitely got our thing together.